Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, monthly album roundup for the month of July 2018. I'm your host Robert, and I can't believe the Smash Bros. Ultimate soundtrack is going to be 900 remixes of Despacito, Africa, and Smooth. And with me I have...
King K. Rule, damn thick boy, I'm on no sleep, please help me.
And...
And the Oscar for Best Public Film goes to... Bob Baby 2. Fuck it, I don't know.
Don't do that, Mark. You know it's gonna happen. Please, don't jinx it for us. We want it to be Black Panther.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Yeah, because they can't just go ahead and nominate it for Best Picture, because it's a movie lots of people see it, and it's one of those, you know, superhero movies, not like all our sophisticated art house fare that all gets crammed into the last month of the year of release anyway, just so we can solely qualify for Oscar. This is not the time for Oscar spiel. We can do that at a later date.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll come sooner rather than later. Although I will say, Mad Max Fury Road, best Oscar bait.
Clearly. But this is not the time for Oscar discourse. This is time to wrap things up for July as the second half of the year starts. Noticeably less cramped than July, that's for sure. But there's still, you know, stuff here that, you know, popped up here and there. Some surprises, some, you know, big stuff here and there. So let's actually just go on right through with, as usual, rounding up just what exactly the hell came out this past July. So, starting off in the rock, indie, folk, whatever camp, there was a new project from Dirty Projectors with Lamp Lit Prose, a new album from indie act Wet with Still Run, country music act Kenny Chesney with Songs for the Saints, and Daughtry with Cage to Rattle.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
We're going to get to hear that story, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, it's quite a story.
But anyway, let's move on to the metal and hardcore stuff. Of course, there was a new solo album from Dee Snider of Twisted Sister fame with For the Love of Metal. Experimental avant-garde act Dog Fashion Disco with their newest album, Experiments in Embryos. Then there was a new Hailstorm album, Vicious. Obscura finally rounding out their conceptual four-album thing with their latest release, Diluvium. Metal artist and, you know, political commentator Otep with her newest album, Cult 45. EP number 3 of 4 from Louisiana Sludge Metalers Thou with Rhea Sylvia. Black Metalers Immortal with Northern Chaos Gods. Stoner Metal Act Bong Ripper with Terminal. One of the surprise drops we got this past month, the newest full-length album from Psycho Stick, Do.
Do, 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 do.
Of course, the latest album from Thrash Black Metaler Skeleton Witch with Devouring Radiant Light. A new EP from Not As Good As Cannibal Corpse with Unburied. That's code for 6 feet under, by the way. New Chelsea Grin album, Eternal Nightmare. New self-titled album from Jungle Rot. Darren Malakian and Scars on Broadway. You know, they're two different things now. With Dictator, their second album, finally. The folks in Between the Buried and Me finally completing their Automata concept album thing with Automata 2. And of course, Shoegaze post-Black Metalers Death Heaven with Ordinary Corrupt Human Love. And now to just run down some of the hip-hop and R&B stuff that came out this past month. Of course, it was a surprise new mixtape from Future and Zaytoven, Beast Mode 2. There was a new album from Wiz Khalifa called Rolling Papers 2. New EP from Meek Mill, Legends of the Summer, which, wait, how does he record an EP if he's in jail?
He got released!
Maybe he has stuff saved up.
I don't know, or I guess recorded after he got out?
Probably. New EP from Jaden Smith called Sire the Electric Album. We had a new mixtape from Lil Xan with Heartbreak Soldiers. Denzel Curry dropping his latest full-length album, Taboo. We got a group joint from the lads in 88 Rising with Head in the Clouds. And, of course, the internet with Hive Mind. And then the only pop album that I really, jotted down here was that new Rick Astley album, Beautiful Life, for those who care about memes beyond their point of expiration. So, Yeah, obviously some big stuff here and there, but I think as far as, you know, the notable stuff, much more contained. But anyway, we're going to, of course, as always, start this off with Mr. Alex over here. So go right on ahead.
All right. Well, first off, there is some stuff I sort of forgot about. For instance, that Scars on Broadway album, I sort of forgot about that. I'm just waiting for the whole System of a Down drama to ease up so we can finally get that new album. Come on, guys.
Aren't we all? Be gentlemen
about it. Yeah. I also didn't bother with the Dee Snider album because I just sort of forgot about that. And I certainly didn't bother with Dollar Store Takeshi 6ix9ine, a.k.a. Lil Xan. How does 6ix9ine have the number 3 single in America right now? How, I say, how?
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I was checking the Hot 100 today. Number 3. Yeah. Featuring Nicki Minaj and Murda Beats.
Why?
Good thing we didn't talk about that. It's okay. So, in a change of pace for me, I actually have a double-digit number of albums to talk about.
What?
12, in fact.
Oh.
Although it's not so much 12 full albums, it's about 7 full albums, 1 half of an album, 2 EPs, a compilation album, and a live album. So it sort of balances out.
Okay, I guess I must have missed them things.
Yeah, I'll mention them later. Okay, so to keep these organized, I'm going to go from bottom tier to top, starting with the meh albums, stuff that I just didn't really care for too much, but still had a lot to say. And boy, oh boy, being a North Carolina kid in 2006, it was an exciting time. This is my Daughtry story.
Ooh, boy!
Back in 2006, when young Alex was just starting middle school, learning to hate everyone and everything around him, he had one thing that he could take solace in, he had one thing he could take solace in on Tuesday and Wednesday nights, in front of the TV with the bunny ears on him. American Idol.
Ah, the bad old days.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, 2006 was their best year, and everything else was just downhill. So much so that in the 2006 season, the third runner-up, Chris Daughtry, actually became a bigger music star than about 75% of the actual winners, which is saying something. And here in North Carolina, oh boy, he was beloved. Not just by others, but by me and my family, because we were into that kind of stuff. Nerds. Again, I should preface, I was 12 years old, and my family was really deep into that whole active rock post-grunge scene, so I had to put up with it. Let us never speak of post-grunge again. So yeah, that whole thing came and went. Then we heard news that when Chris Daughtry has got himself a band and a record deal and a debut album. Of course we bought it, we listened to it, we liked it. It had 7 singles on the charts.
Seven. What is that, some Nickelback shit? Wow.
This was 2007, where rock radio was pretty easy to get a single out of.
Clearly.
Yeah. Heck, we even saw Mr. Daughtry in concert toward the end of 2007. It was a pretty good show. Kind of a short show. We forgot who the opening act was, but it doesn't matter anyway. We thought this guy could do no wrong. And then he did. What a sophomore slump that next album was. And the one after. And the one after. And so was the Greatest Hits compilation.
Damn!
Wait, he had more hits than one?
Did you not hear me say he had 7 singles off that first album?
Yeah, 7 singles. He didn't say 7 hits.
Whatever. So, after a long absence away from this man, I'm deep digging back into the realm of Mr. Chris Daughtry and wondering what the hell happened. Because guess what? More Imagine Dragons syndrome on this album.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Long gone are the post-grunge elements that sold that first album like hotcakes. It's literally one of the most successful rock albums in modern history, according to SoundScan. And, well, you got more Imagine Dragons Light, and see my rant from last month, know how I feel about that. I'm not going to repeat it because my voice is kind of shot tonight. This is not a good album. It's a very dull album. It's very symptomatic of most rock music in the current age. In one ear, out the other, completely disposable until the next big rock radio hit comes around. And my biggest gripe is just a simple one. Everything here is oozing with overthought. The instruments are too produced, the lyrics are too overwritten thanks to the "you don't need 10 outside songwriters for this" number of songwriters on the album.
Why?
Because that's what you do when you have a record contract that's very, very, very tight. You know, considering it's from the American Idol people. Yeah, not very fun. And it all just comes off as an album that's, well, typical of albums in the current age. In one ear, out the other. Forgettable in, like, two listens, then you move on to the next one. That's a bad sign. We all deserve better. In short, it's just 39 minutes of disposable music, complete with, oh good, for a few seconds at least, on the track Back in Time, trap beats.
Oh, wow.
that sound was me facepalming.
I had to pinch the bridge of my nose. It's just, ugh. I hate the state of rock music in 2018 so much. The metal stuff, though, that's pretty good. This next one, maybe not so much.
Oh.
Otep Shariah, Cult 45. But, off the bat, this is still a better protest album than whatever the hell Ministry put out. But that being said, the bar was at the very, very, very bottom of the floor.
Yeah, dude, that bar is so low that only Hermes could limbo underneath it.
Yeah. So, protest albums. There's a very tricky line to cross when making one. You have to know how to frame your message in a proper way, as some people on the internet need to figure out given certain events regarding a certain numbskull insane maniac. It's not a matter of free speech, okay? It's a matter of, oh, you're smearing shit on our walls. Get out. It's sticking up the joint.
Stop smearing dead frogs everywhere. What does this have to do with anything?
Yeah. Anyway. When making a protest album, there are a few routes you could take. You could go the sort of peace and love route of the late 60s, early 70s. You could go the aggro route of Rage Against the Machine in the early 90s. Or you could do something like Green Day's American Idiot. A core central theme of that album was a strong sense of resistance and revulsion toward the policies of one George W. Bush, as shown on the track Holiday. But that whole album wasn't like that. It had that theme as part of a grander story, as, loose as it may be. But it actually served a purpose within that one song and within the greater outlook of that album. Therefore, it worked. Especially on the title track, It's eerie how well that still rings today. God, we haven't progressed that far at all, have we?
We have not.
Yeah, but as for this album, as much as I like giving a giant middle finger to the current administration of one fuckface von Clown Shoes and his criminal gang, and the cult-like fandom that came as a result, you need a bit of subtlety in your message. Most of these messages are pretty much boots to the face, repeatedly. Not very subtle. Granted, there is a little bit of subtlety in the track, Said the Snake, but the message gets really quick. I will fix it by myself. Yeah, I wonder what that's referencing. Doesn't take a genius to figure that out. That being said, some songs don't really need subtlety, like the track Shelter in Place, which is one gigantic middle finger right to the NRA and Ted Nugent, which I'm always for.
Same.
Yup.
Yeah. And lyrics aside, the music is kind of schizophrenic. There's a good bit of strong, if simple, metal all over. And then there's the track Undefeated, which starts as sort of like a full-on SoundCloud grime track. It's jarring as hell.
I'm not talking good UK grime music. I'm talking about the bad stuff you find on SoundCloud.
Oh.
And then there's the track Cross Contamination, which starts like it's a late 90s nu metal track. I would say more, but nobody's uploaded the lyrics to Genius or to Apple Music, so I can't really give a deep dive into some of the other songs without actually knowing what the hell she's saying. I'm also running on very little sleep as well, so that counts. But yeah, this whole album, very schizophrenic. One minute you're hearing a barrage of aggro, and the next you have a piano ballad in Be Brave. Kind of weird. Kind of like that one Machine Head song, Bastards.
Bastards.
Yeah. Not the best song with that asterisk name, but we'll get to that later. The album as a whole is weird. It'll certainly be dated very soon, but honestly, it's not that bad to me, but it's also not something I listen to on repeat that much. It's just sort of there as a piece of political art that'll be outdated in 3 years.
Hopefully 3 years.
Yeah. And I can just imagine the reactions that people like Ben Shapiro, Tony Lauren, Sean Hannity, Lou Cobb, and the rest of the Trump cocksuckers would give hearing this.
Don't forget all the classical liberals.
We're all going to die soon. Doesn't matter.
Fingers crossed.
Giant Meteor 2020. Come on. Okay. All right. Next up, I have what I'm going to call my brief mentions list. Albums that I like, but I can't say a whole lot about because I know you guys will do much more for me. So let's start off with, let me just get my fretless 7-string bass out for this one. How about that Obscura album, Diluvium?
Hey!
Yeah, the second big foray of prog tech death this year, and it's certainly no slouch. The album has such a strong, foreboding presence of doom to it, complete with some excellent bass noodling on fretless, which is very difficult because you gotta have your intonation right, and some fine dual guitar work as well. It'll make some metal album of the year lists for sure. And maybe mine? Who knows?
Ew.
Yeah. Oh, and obligatory Rivers of Nile still number one. Yeah. Next up, dare I say, new frontrunner for thrash album and black metal album of the year with Skeleton Witch? Yeah, Devouring Ray Light. Pretty strong outing. Hits pretty dang hard from start to end. It's such a very well-crafted blend of thrash and black metal, and point in its favor for having very good production work to it and not sounding like, you know, tinny ass.
The tinniest.
Yeah, like a Line 6 Spider 2.
Heh.
Alright, next up, 88 Risings, compilation, Head in the Clouds. Ooh. And first off, did you know they performed Midsummer Madness on TRL?
Really?
I didn't know that, since people still watch TRL.
Yeah, and did you know TRL has been doing so bad, they made it a half-hour show, made it pre-taped, and are airing it at 8 o'clock in the morning?
Wow, that's like Cartoon Network-style scheduling.
Man, that's like Aaron. That's like Aaron Kogias at 5 in the morning bad.
Yeah. What a shame. Such high hopes. Yikes. Anyway, for this, the 88 Rising label, collective, group, something, has their big collab album out containing a good fine blend of smooth summer jams and some pretty hard trap and synth bangers. The track Beam immediately struck off to me with having an opening melody that sounds like it's coming from a Tycho track. But of course, it pretty much goes away the moment I hear Rich Brian and Playboi Carti rapping on the track.
Oh yeah, he does appear on this album.
Why'd you have to ruin it? I was like in the groove. Oh well.
Because Playboi Carti.
It's a pretty strong comp album, even if some of the tracks sound like it's something right from SoundCloud and style, but I'm sure most people are going to go into this for the Joji stuff, especially the closer track, Head in the Clouds. Such a good song to end it out with.
This album needed way more Joji.
Yeah. I think we just want a full Joji album at this point.
Clearly.
Alright, rounding out this section, it's Psycho Stick, the greatest band of this generation or any generation. Do I have to say much else?
Do!
Do, 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 do. Yes. Excellent, excellent comedic metal work from these guys. I can very much relate to Introvert Party Time. I hate being around people. I can hear the love and the clear tribute to bands such as Napalm Death and Anal Cunt and Grrr. And I'm always up for taking the piss out of Trap and Vocoders and Flop.
Flop!
Yeah. Alright. Now we get to my good stuff, which is my whole second half of my list here. Starting with a pair of EPs. The first one coming from Australian prog math gent guitarist Pliny. His 4-track EP, Sunhead, has probably some of the prettiest, most ambient gent guitar work I've heard in a long while. Now, he's not quite the big name like, Toast and the Bosti and Misha Mansour, but he's got some killer work through his name. Definitely check out his Bandcamp page. There's a lot of good stuff there. As for this EP, there's a good bit of jazz fusion all over it, be it in the more open and ambient sections of the first track Kind, or throughout the entirety of Flaneur, I said that right. Which, that track sounds like something ripped right from Persona 5 with a guitar track overdubbed on it. It's killer.
Well, I wouldn't know. I still haven't had time to get to Persona 5. Me.
Yeah, you and me both. Sorry, Josh. Yeah. Now, one review I read for this EP mentioned that there's a bit of a snarky puppy vibe to it, which I can totally hear in the track. It's all over there with that blend of rock and jazz fusion. Hmm. I like jazz fusion. The remaining two tracks on here, Salt Plus Charcoal and Sunhead, are the more genty tracks of the EP, complete with the ambient upbeat presence Pliny is known for, combining, super heavy, low-tune chugging riffs with some pretty bright melodic soloing and tapping. He's got a very unique style to him. I definitely recommend checking him out if you want some fine guitar stuff, or if you want some chill ambient vibes to do your homework to.
Mm.
Also, check out his mashup of his track Away with the Kendrick Lamar track Poetic Justice.
Really. Someone say Kendrick?
Good. Yeah. And Drake.
Oh.
He's on Poetic Justice. What can I do about it? Alright, next up, I'm going to geek out a little bit. What does WWE stand for?
Actually, that's a good question. What does it stand for?
Walk with Elias.
Oh, okay then.
I am actually going to talk about a novelty gimmick EP. An EP from one of the fine talents from WWE, a man simply known as Elias. At night, pro wrestler, and at night, also at night, a traveling guitar man with a nice little Fender acoustic. He just goes out to the ring and complains about the city he's in. And we all love it because I think we all hate our own hometowns.
I know. It's the most pop-punk thing about us.
Yes, he's a super arrogant heel or a bad guy that strums a guitar and complains about everyone and everything before getting interrupted. He's the personification of everyone. Myself included. Yes. And he's not without his little bit of comedy, because on one such track, Nothing I Can Do, there's actually a fake ending, which actually leads into the real ending, which, fake endings, that's always jarring.
And isn't
I'm
it
foreshadowing.
Though?
Yeah. Good stuff. If you want just a little fun gimmick EP of a wrestler who hates everyone and you just want to live vicariously through this wonderful wordsmith, go ahead and check it out. Actually charted pretty high on the iTunes charts, beating out Taylor Swift and The Sauce Man.
Ooh.
Not to be confused with The Postman. Not that Postman, the other Postman.
That guy's hair.
Continuity. Alright, next up, I'm going to talk about a band I have kind of a love-hate relationship with. Hailstorm and their new album, Vicious.
Mm.
Yes. When I really like them, I think they have some of the best rock music out there in the scene right now. And when I don't like them, I think they have some of the schmaltziest stuff any rock band has ever written, such as the case of half the tracks of The Strange Case of Hailstorm. Because my God, I know I Miss the Misery is a good song, but like half of that album is just oh, it's not good. Yeah, anyway, as for this album, much tighter, much heavier, much more, dare I say, like a rock album. It can be done. And right off the bat, it kicks off in high gear with the opening scream of Black Vultures. A nice, bellowing echo of awesomeness, if there ever was. And it goes right on through the first set of tracks, with special mention to the lead single, Uncomfortable. Pretty good rock banger. And while Lizzie Hale and company like to rock out, she's not afraid to talk about heavy subjects on this album. Like sex. Specifically in the track, Do Not Disturb, which, in not-so-sweet terms, talks about whoever Lizzie is portraying in the song, insisting on, well, a threesome with some guy and his girlfriend in a hotel room.
Do they do it?
That's up for you to imagine. Although the following track, Conflicted, is about our narrator having some confliction, get it, after a passionate night of, well, passion. So maybe they're connected songs, you never know.
Maybe.
But in short, this is some horny on main stuff, yo. Jeez. Not quite Cardi B level horny on main, but yeah, kind of close. Yeah. Now, the rest of the album fits the mold of pretty heavy rock anthems with an acoustic ballad or two sprinkled in here and there. It's honestly something you'd hear from a hair band in the mid-80s, where you're talking about, you know, rocking every arena, having sex, partying, thinking about that long-lost loved one. But it's set in a modern active rock setting in both instrumentation and approach, which greatly helps them from falling into the label of walking cliche cover band. Greta.
Anthony Fantano. Anthony Fantano, we have to call you out. You have bad takes on Greta Van Fleet.
Yes. Crash Thompson, you have good takes, though. Yeah. In short, this is a pretty strong album. Probably the strongest Hailstorm album I've heard since, probably ever. It raises the bar, and it's certainly one of the better rock albums I've heard all year, based on the fact that it isn't following the trends.
Trends.
Yes, there is proof that you can actually still make a rock album with actual guitars and actual drums, and oh my god, I sound like Glenn Ficker. Somebody help me.
Wait, why don't we help you? I thought that was what you were aspiring to.
I'm already halfway there anyway. I just need the long hair and I'll be good to go. I also have to find a way to move to Canada. Or at least outside of Detroit. But anyway. Alright, next up. This might be one of the best albums all year. Fuck You, Fight Me. Deaf Heaven, OCHL.
Huh.
Yeah, the first couple of singles we heard on the show got me curious for the whole album, so I decided to check it out. Oh boy, that was an experience. Sign of what to expect. The first track, You Without End, starts all pretty with the piano, and then the fast drums and piercing vocals come into play, and it's just, if anything, I'm intrigued at this point, and I have to go deeper in. That leads right into the next two tracks, Honeycomb and Canary Yellow, and to me, it sounds like a blend of Skeleton Witch and the Cranberries with a bit of prog and pop punk in there. It's a weird combination, but it's right up my alley I didn't even know existed, and I didn't even know I needed to know. It's weird, but it works for me. By and far, the longer and heavier songs take it all home for me, but the shorter and more ambient tracks in Near and Night People are not without their place to cool listeners down a bit, because you don't want, you know, a full-on barrage of, you know, aggro noise. Now, this is definitely a strange album from a strange band that blends quite a few opposing genres together, but it makes for a very solid album, and one I really dig. Those drums sound great, too. Shout out to the engineer for this album.
Should have probably jotted that name down now that I think about it.
Yeah, probably should have. All right, next up. The second half of the epic concept release from Between the Buried and Me, Automata 2. And first, let me just say, as a standalone album, this doesn't work. It's only four tracks, just over 30 minutes. right in media res. But that being said, as the continuation to the first half, man, does this go to some trippy places. So where we left off, Blot left me wanting so much more after that excellent 10.5-minute masterwork, which leads right into the proverbial bellow, and I swear this is lifted right off of Coma Ecliptic. And specifically the tracks Memory Palace and Option Oblivion, which isn't a bad thing. Those last three tracks are amazing. Mm. And then it gets weird with a 2-minute polka and ragtime interlude called Glide.
It's all French and shit.
What?
Yes, French polka and ragtime. I wonder if they got one of Fluff's baritone guitars for that. Inside jokes. Yeah. But that just leads right into the next track, Voice of Trespass, and it just bangs like a motherfucker from the get-go. In a weird way, the start of the track reminds me a bit of House of Wolves by MCR, which, again, is in the bath, and the Black Parade's one of the best albums ever.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, but by the second half of the song, things slow a bit down and get more menacing, with a fine reprise of the first half of Automata in the lyrics. We are hollow, condemned to the gallows. And that goes right into The Grid, the grand finale of this two-album concept epic, which, what's this about again? I had to look it up, and per word of God, the concept is about being able to see into other people's dreams, and specifically one person's dreams as they are broadcast all over the world, which are centered around our protagonist's own mental well-being and all that. It's definitely more like The Truman Show and less like EdTV. I need to watch The Truman Show sometime. Heard of good things. But yeah, within the music of this two-album set, it's a lot less thematically tied together than, say, Coma Ecliptic was. But there are some strong tracks within the two-album set, and when combined, it makes for a very, very strong outing from BT Bam. I would agree that this didn't really need to be a two-album thing spaced out over, what was it, 5 months?
4 months, I think.
Four months. Yeah, I'd agree it didn't have to be split across 4 months, given that the Sumerian Records, I guess they wanted to do something a little bit different, but maybe they were just better off releasing both parts at once, like with Juggernaut? Maybe? Oh well. Either way, excellent work from these guys. I would love to catch them live sometime again. I can say for sure, this is going to make a lot of the Prague Album of the Year lists, and possibly mine.
Possibly.
You know, you never know. There can be some surprises here and there. I mean, we are getting some surprises later this month. All right, and lastly, here's that live album I was talking about, and it comes with a little bit of a prelude. You see, back in 1997, a young man from Canada named Devin Townsend moved to Los Angeles and wrote two of the greatest albums ever, the first one being Strapping a Lad City, and the second one being Ocean Machine.
Yes.
20 years later, well, we've reached the end of an era in a way, in a couple of ways, because we have Devin Townsend Project's Ocean Machine live at the Ancient Roman Theater in Plovdiv, Bulgaria. Boy, oh boy. I want to say this is a career-spanning concert for Devin, but we've had like four of these already. We had By a Thread, we had Rental Circus, Ziltoid at the Royal Albert Hall, and now we got Ocean Machine live in Plovdiv. The guy knows how to go all out, at least.
Yes.
Yes, 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 yes. And the way this concert is set up, it's pretty much a two-set show. The first set being the quote-unquote By Request set, which is pretty much some of the bigger hits from the DTP, such as Storm Mending and Failure from Transcending, which how did I forget to put that on my 2016 Album of the Year list?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I gotta redo that whole thing, man. I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah. And of course, there are some classic Devin Townsend staples, such as Deadhead, and of course, a little bit of Ziltoid in By Your Command, and even some surprising inclusions, such as Ohm from the Infinity Outtakes EP. Even it's there's also a bit of a rarity of Canada from Terria. A nice little track to hear. Mm-hmm. But that's not what we're here to talk about. This is a very special concert in that it's set in a, in essence, a Roman Colosseum built out of granite. It's just a half circle of seats, just stone and granite with the stage right in the center. And you have Devin Townsend and his band performing with a live orchestra for the first half of the show. And coming from someone who got into both orchestral music and metal at the same time, thank you, S&M, greatest live album ever. Mm. Immediate, yes, I'm into this. I am into this. The orchestrations that accompany these songs are excellent. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Especially on Stormbending. That is a fine intro. My one gripe, though, is that I don't know what happened in the mixing process, but the drums are way too front and center on here. They should be a little bit more in the back, accentuating all of the guitars and the orchestra and bass and vocals. Translation, turn the drums down a little bit, guys. Do it next time. Then comes the second half of the set, which is the entirety of Ocean Machine, start to finish, with a special guest. They actually flew in a man named, let me see if I'm saying this right, yeah, John Harder, a.k.a. Squid, who recorded the bass on Ocean Machine with Devin Townsend back in 96. Unfortunately, Mr. Harder does suffer from multiple sclerosis. That made it a bit difficult to arrange at first, but they got out working, even if he had to play bass sitting down in a chair. Still, props and effort for toughening it out for that concert. Unfortunately, they couldn't bring the original drummer of the album, Marty Chapman, as he has been dead for a while.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, so we got Ryan playing the drums. He's a very, very good drummer indeed.
He also has a funny last name.
Which I can't pronounce. Alright, so start to finish. Ocean Machine is a very atmospheric album. The diametric opposite of Strapping Young Lad City, which in a way kind of works because there's always been a dual album situation between SYL and Devin. You have City and Ocean Machine. You have, I believe, yeah, SYL and Terria. You have a new black and Synchestra. Synchestra? I think that's how you say it?
Yeah, I think so. I never got that right, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, sort of the two halves of Devin Townsend, which may or may not have to do with bipolar disorder, but anyway. It's quite a moving album. It is an album that, by all admission, was written about Devin's experience living in the city of Los Angeles, as was City, those sessions with Strapping on Lad. But it's meant to be more of an atmospheric kind of experience, more ambient in a way, with a whole lot of synths and strings and a whole shit ton of reverb. And can I just say, Bastard is probably the greatest song he's ever written. Like, holy shit, that is like the perfect Devin Townsend song from start to finish. It's amazing. Hmm. As such is The Death of Music, which, that goes places. As does the rather mellow and chill Thing Beyond Things. A nice cool down from all the intense guitar riffage heard all over this album and through this performance, like on the tracks Night and Regulator! Yeah. And what makes this more of an end of an era kind of thing is that back in January, we got word that Devin Townsend has officially disbanded the DTP as he's going to be working on his own projects, as in four new albums, which will be coming out sometime in the next couple of years.
Hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yes. We need that concept album about the penis.
I thought that was supposed to be an opera.
Oh, yes. It was supposed to be an opera. Yeah. That's going to be like deconstruction on acid, isn't it?
Hey, I'll be here for it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And if that's not your thing, we'll have a new Casualties of Cool album coming soon as well. So yeah. And there's a reason why I wanted to bring this in at the very end. A lot of the music that we all, and especially I, talk about with these roundups, like I said with Daughtry, it comes across as very disposable in one ear out the other, no lasting impact. Stuff like what Devin Townsend has written, be it by himself, or with Strapping, or with the Devin Townsend Band, or DTP, or Cowboys Cool, or whatever, that is music that will stand the test of time, not just in prog circles, but in just music circles. You have a wide, wide range of stuff that he's written. Ambient music, heavy industrial, you know, sort of country, folk kind of music, and of course, all the atmospheric prog stuff with the later half of DTP. This is the kind of music that will stand the test of time at the end of the day, and not so much, you know, all the commercialized stuff that we get either on CD or on the radio. And whatever Devin is going to be bringing out next, whether it's, you know, an offer about the penis or another Casualties of Cool record or who the hell knows, I think we're all going to be here for it. I know I am.
As am I.
Yeah. I would end things off with the Thing Beyond Things scream, but my voice is in shambles and I don't want to risk straining it, so let's just nod and pretend I did.
I'll probably edit in, you know, later. Thing Beyond Things.
Yeah.
Right? Make a note of that for later.
Yeah.
But yeah, that closes out Alex, and as you can tell, he went on for quite a bit. Pretty much doubled the length as usual. So now, let's of course move on, as we always do, with the Mac person. The Big Mac, if you will.
Oh, okay. My damn sandwich now. Alright. So yeah, anyway. So you remember last time that I had about 15 albums to review? Well, guess what? This time I have 5 because I'm not doing that much. There was a bunch in there anyway. I will say what I did not check.
We did a swap.
Yeah. I will say I did not check out. I didn't listen to Cleveland because I'm not going to another 25 album track. No, not this time. And no, the future. No, to that either. So, yeah, I'm going to start with actually 2 EPs. First, let's start with Old Meek Millie. With his 4-track EP, Legends of the Summer, which basically, well, if you heard Meek Mill album or any track of his, like, hey, it's a mini version of that, just condensed to 4 tracks, which actually is better because let's face it, Meek Mill is not the greatest rapper out there, but I do appreciate what he does. Like he's very energetic. He does have the energy on the mic. Although his content can either be hit or miss. On this EP, he has, like I said, 4 tracks. He'd have at least 1 or 2 bangers, which would be Philadelphia. Yes, I said Philadelphia with Swiss Beats.
So, are you saying it's always sunny in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I guess. Yes, but yeah, that song is really just like him speaking about, you know, like, you know, now that, you know, now, you know, how he got out, he's free now, he's free now, he's like, yeah, motherfucking free, all that shit. Although he did get one interpolation out of there in the lyrics, which he said, nigga, I'm an icon living. He got that from the song Icon from Jaden Smith. It's all right. And then you get a typical R&B-ish track crossover with, you know, Dangerous with Peanut Butter and Jelly Rock. I mean, P&B J Rock. And Jermaine. A name I ain't heard in a while. Or at least not as much.
That's a birthday sex guy, right?
Like I said, your typical. Yeah, that dude. Yeah, that dude. But yeah, like I said, you know, your very typical R&B crossover track with, you know, with, I think, the singers doing better. And then like 1 AM. That's blah. That's whatever. And then your last track, Stay Woke, which basically, me talking about, you know, the whole, you know, the broken justice from this point of view, you know, police brutality, all the shit happening around, you know what man talking about now these days, like, you know, brutality, all that shit, and I do appreciate that track as well. I mean, I will say, but Gil did well as well. But that's what I was gonna say. Like, it's an okay EP. It's basically all the Meek you need if you want to listen to Meek Mill, just not on an album or mixtape. Just like something that take you like 13 minutes to get through. So yeah, there's that. And now for another EP, and another EP of something from somebody that I reviewed a month ago, and that is Wonchuk's Point Never in his latest EP, The Station, which is actually just, well, The Station from his last, from the album Age Of, which I talked about last month, and three new tracks.
Surprise!
Yeah, I will say the DC tracks, what's your name? Modernity? Damn, I can't say that shit right.
Modernity,
Blow by Blow, and Trance One. Yeah, I will say they all got the industrial sound, like very different than what you heard from Age Of. Like, it is mostly, you know, mostly instrumental, like very trance like stuff. It is, I will say it's noisy, but it's like industrial noise. But it is pretty much, I won't say leftovers, but more like, I think he let them off Asia for a good reason. Like, maybe they wouldn't fit in there, which I kind of get. Because hearing those three tracks, I'm like, okay, I mean, maybe they would fit. I don't know. I just my thought process. But the three songs in there, they're pretty dope. They're pretty dope. It's a good, you know, maybe dessert of what I got from Asia, which I still really loved. Well, yeah, that's all I gotta say for that one as well. That was pretty good too. And now, another highlight: the 88 Rising album, the debut group album, Head in the Clouds. And yes, a group that consists of Joji, Rich Brian, and other acts I didn't know, like the Higher Brothers, Keep Ape, and August 8. And yes, at the court this time, it is August 8. And what happened with this album? Yeah, you know, it's like a very, you know, it's a, you know, summer album, which full of, you know, for trappish R&B and hip hop, and you know, I get some good performances out of people like Joji's pretty good. I like Rich Brian and the other people like Nikki, which, okay, she got a good singing voice. I like what I heard from her. Although I will say Higher Brothers, like, I have tried to maybe look for them in the tracks. I was like, man, it was okay. Like, Midnight, like, Midsummer Madness, that was good. I did like Disrespecting and Nothing Wrong featuring Higher Brothers and Golden Link, which I thought that was pretty good too. Like, I don't have much qualms with it. Like, the album is pretty okay. It's definitely like what I call like a very, something you play like when you, I don't know, outside, if you want to go outside, that is. And if I had any more man points or no points, play Bacardi is definitely no point for me. Like, just sort of blah. And I do see, like, you know, more like a lot of features outside right here. Like, you see O3 Guido on Swimming Pool, Black Boy JB in most of these tracks, like Peach Jam and Let It Go, which I know so much about him, which Bubble JB, I don't know too much about him. And Japan 88 with famous Dex on there, which he would talk about Japan a lot of his songs, because he got a song called Japan, at least on his own. I don't know, I'm looking at famous Dex for some fucking reason, but This compilation album, like, you know, it's, you know, for me to introduce, we get introduced into this group, and even though I did listen to, you know, Rich Brian's album earlier this year, and I thought that was okay, this one was pretty, It was fine too. Like, maybe I wouldn't go back to it as much, but it's still alright. That's just me, but yeah, it's definitely alright. And now get to the two last ones, or the ones that actually reviewed and talked about, well, in a written form. But now before we get to the big one, to me, I'm gonna get to, let's go to the internet. No, not the internet. The group that internet. Yeah, yes, the R&B group who you may know used to be associated with Odd Future, but since you know they're donezo. Of course, they released their fourth album, Hive Mind. Now I have gone through the catalog of albums, and okay, they got this song that I absolutely like on there. Like, it's very, you know, alternative, experimental R&B with some groove to it. And I will say, like, what got me into them was their third album, Ego Death. Which got some good moments in it, especially that song Girl, which I really like a lot. Future Kitchen, not by the way. Also do for him too, but yeah. But yeah. So going to this album, which I mean, I was putting nothing else except like get some good groom vibes, and that's what I got. And it said, there's no skits, no interludes, no features, just 1 hour straight music. Which they deliver what they promise. I got some school jams. I got some, you know, cause they got some opener here with Come Together, which the way they play the bass was very mesmerizing. And I really do love the vocals. The vocals there from Sid and Steve Lacy on there. They are killing up there. And of course the singles I still like. They're like Roll Burbank Funk, which is still a fucking joint. Calm Down, which is still another favorite of mine up there. And with some more joints in there. Let's see, like I said, you do get this summery chill vibe throughout the whole album with the usual off kilter production style with that soulful melodic blend. Just been one chill month for me, but yeah, like. Although I will say, as a negative, some songs, while I do like some of them, this song said either just play in the background, like some will fly in and out of your ear. So yeah, but there's still the more tracks that I can still bang. We still go with like Bravo, Mood, and Next Time / Humble Pie. The Humble Pie part of that track really got me really got me liking Sid's vocals in there. And over the one track I do like is The Beat Goes On, where Steve Lacy and Matt Martians and somebody named Marcus Lee, they take me on the vocals on, and they really got some cool vocals going on there. It's a fucking vibe. I do like that about this album. I wouldn't spend much from it. I mean, but not in a bad way, but it's like, it's a good album. Like, I mean, like I said, another fine summer album that I can listen to while I'm relaxing. That's what they promise you. And I like that I got that. And before, I will say this, even though it was on the album, the Roll Burbank Funk Kitchenata remix, it's still fucking cool, though. I just wish it was on the album, But hey, I like what I got from the internet. It's still some good shit. And now, the moment most of all y'all been waiting for, because you know I'm talking about this a lot, and that is Denzel Curry's Taboo.
Yeah!
And yes, you're wondering, why is there a 13 in Taboo? Well, We're looking back at his lowest catalog. Knows that 13's a big factor in this because his last EP was called 13. The title has 13 placed in the B, and most of the tracks placed in the B with 13. And Taboo has 13 tracks. I will say the weirdest thing about this album is the release schedule, because this album is split into three acts. Act 1 being light, Act 2 being gray, and Act 3 being dark. And they released, like, you know, they found the official release, like, yeah, like Act 1 would be, you know, released Wednesday, Act 2 would be released Thursday, and of course her album be on Friday. Yeah, it's a very weird weird schedule, but you know what? It did help him, like, you know, understand the acts one by one, which, okay, I get that. I like that. And now, before I'm talking about Act One Light. Now you're thinking, oh, Light must be very lighthearted. And no, the fuck it don't. Because it's on the title track, Taboo, the first line of the chorus is definitely, it says, "Welcome to the darkest side of Taboo. All we have is permanent scars and tattoos. Take another step in the path that you choose. Make a bad choice in your path, and then you lose." Yeah, considering that track, it's on Molestation, because he was still in a relationship between he had with this girl who suffered sexual abuse when she was young, and, you know, with that she came, you know, mostly distant, as in, you know, it's like, you know, she's afraid to trust, you know, people, which I kind of get, and he offers, you know, offer shoulder to cry on, you know, be a friend, like, all that shit, even though he includes sex in there, but they're like, okay, like, you want to make her feel better, but not, you know, but in a helpful way, which I'm getting from this. And like I said, like, Light is definitely more of his more melodic and soulful side of him that I've never seen before, because you know, he's usually, you know, very hardcore, very aggressive, which you do get, but you do get in here, but we'll get to that later. I will say Black Balloons is definitely a surprise for me, because this is a very wavy and smooth jam. We didn't expect him, like, at all. Because this is something, like, this is something you hear somebody, this is a very, very wavy track, which features 12-11 on the hook. Yeah, that's a name, that's a confusing name, trying to say 12-11, and Gold Link, who actually does fit in here for what he says. And notice in the song, there's a lot of it references, whereas he says, "What's said from Pennywise, I guess we all float, and let it float, you get the rest, it's a lot of references to this motherfucker, just so you know." And the references do keep a coming with this wordplay, like on Cash Maniac, he had this one line where he goes, "That's me at my lowest, no Peter Griffin." Okay.
That's what he did there.
Yeah, and you see my future, but you can't have it. I see my future, but I'm not B Rabbit. And of course, and we'll say on sumo, the end of the part or Act One, which of course you get credit with a signature insane flow, and of course references because he referenced after last Airbender as in Curry get the flame called Nigga Prezuko. And you get me, for the first time in hip hop, I think, he referenced Chowder. He fucking referenced Chowder.
Rodder.
He goes like, "Chopper, you nigga like Chowder." Yeah. Rodder. Okay. Okay.
You take the moon. Oh my God, the moon is falling. Somebody help.
Don't forget about the Sly Cooper reference.
There's a lot of references in there. Like, of course, you get the Act Two with Gray, you know, the middle part, which, you know, and we start off with, of course, with the track Super Saiyan Superman, and yeah, you know what reference this is, you know, because every watch anime knows what they're referencing, because he talks about how we got the flow of a certain Super Saiyan. So if Goku had bars, it would be like this, I think. Not much if Goku did rap.
While you got that shit, like, you do got something like switching up where he goes on about his bipolar disorder and paranoia, mainly, you know, around a lot about, you know, like family things, and of course that comes on to talk about on the previously single Cloud Cobain, which Hookie's talking about, you know, how people will talk about getting clout and how much they sacrifice themselves in order to get the clout, in order to stay popular. Even if it's a creator, like, you can be popular, but you feel like you wasted your time on this shit, which, yeah, you get that from a lot of, you know, rappers that do that shit. And
I will say my favorite track out of Act Two is "Mad I Got It" because the way he was spitting out there and the way I like the chorus when he talked about this is of course I like when because I'd be singing along with we said "Big Cheese Pellin." You spit the line, you talk shit, but I keep smelling. That's your chick, but not my shit. She got malice. She at your head, but not my head, because I drop notch. You glad when I never had shit, but mad when I got it. Man, I get it. Yeah. I just love hearing from him. Like, he has that bravado. You know, sounds cool doing the shit. And of course, like that track, it does talk about, you know, envy, distrust. This looks like somebody get mad at a person like Iggy says that they ain't got shit. On a surface level, it does sound like a typical don't trust these hoes anthem, but more the second, like, nah, that's far from that shit. Because third grade talk about how on the spectrum of being pissed at the government for, you know, a lot of shit. And of course, you got tracks like Sirens. Which, you know, again, focus on the Crusade of America and the struggle of, you know, brutality, gun violence also coming since he, mostly because I read that his brother got killed during the and that shit was just, yeah, that's all fucked up. And with that, you get a good hook from Billie Eilish and another rapper, as you heard from the WXL freshman this year, JID or J-I-D. Again, another good rapper there. And now, last part is Dark. As in, yeah, this shit goes harder than ever. Because like the first song on there, Blackest Balloon, he's talking about, you know, his family, how, and also mentioned about how people sit on Xanax and pills, even when one of her, it's like, okay, on this one, it's like, you know how that rapper Little Peep died last year, and people thinking, man, I shouldn't take Xanax anymore, it's destroying our country, it's destroying everything, our youth. Y'all still taking this shit, so. Y'all ain't changed that much, so it's like, y'all don't give a shit.
Some people never learn.
Pretty much. And then, with Perks, when Dilla takes shots at the commercial industry about how rappers just get by using fire beats, but they ain't saying much. And of course, this verse says, all like, on tree, I'm not fuck with Perks, I better fuck with the earth. On me, industry niggas the worst, act like they from the dirt. On me, I don't fuck with the purse. I may fuck with the earth. I mean, all the niggas I birthed to put me in a hearse. Which, okay. Like, he definitely goes hard on here. And speaking of going hard, the next track, Vengeance, which features Zilla Kami and JPEG Mafia.
Hey!
Yeah, they also go hard on this track. And I noticed on JPEG Mafia's verse. His verse was around the whole Pusha T Drake beef, which I'm trying to look up now, which he says, I ain't Drake, this ain't six, it's a nine, sticky blicky, I am sticky, fuck you, run to keep it tucked, you know my shot's a shot, when it cries, you cry, you die, pussy beat this guy, rappers telling lies, oh, is he too hard, hit her right like A-Card, her talking shit on Twitter, 40, make him log off, no more press to make you bitter, bitch, you better be cautious, I'm just nasty. Okay, holy shit. And of course, closing out with Black Metal Terrorist, it's just him saying he's a GOAT rapper. That's all. And with that said, if you want a rapper that goes very hard on trap beats and knows how to fucking rap around those beats, Denzel Curry is that guy. This is one of the best projects I heard, best rap projects I heard from this year, and this definitely him. Well, he's still good as he is, but he showed a lot of versatility, especially around production, and talked a lot of content, which he brought his A game on there, and. I just say I really love this project. This is why he deserves such praise, because it doesn't feel it doesn't feel forcefully dark. It's not like I'm sad. I'm very sad. This is edgy. Like it's none of that shit. This is pretty natural at the end. And man, this is
Yeah, I'm just gonna end it there. This is definitely. Yep, it's another contender for album for my top list this year. This is Curious That Do. Y'all should listen to Taboo.
Well, that was certainly interesting to hear about those five different releases. And now to round it out by getting over to me, which I didn't actually count how many albums I put down, but I'm sure someone will. I'll probably count it in post. So anyway, let's start off as I always do with my top picks, and I didn't think I would get potential Album of the Year nominees this month, but I actually did get one right at the last Friday of the month, and this was one I almost completely forgot about until like the day before it came out. Now, let me tell you, one of the big sort of breakout debuts of 2016 was from this band called Frontier. They released an album called Orange Mathematics, and I'll admit I didn't get to it until 2017, which is a shame, because if I had heard that album in 2016, that probably would have severely reshaped my year-end best of list, because it was just so insane. It was like an even more upgraded version of like the Tony Danza Tap Dance Extravaganza meets Car Bomb. Just think that level of fucking frenetic, like super mathy metalcore, just insanity. And so here we are in 2018, and they've released their second full-length album, Unloved. And man, when it opens up right away, it does not skip a beat. The album opener, Tumoric, opens with these huge pounding drums creating this massive suffocating space and those belting screeches before it lays on the guitar thick. And when I mean thick, they are thick and they are spastic. They're all jittery as all hell, matching up with like the fierce, like off-kilter rhythm of the drums. And you know, the chorus bits, if you can call them that, they intersperse like the, you know, just the fucking swelling low-end blast of the guitars with these sort of effects process screeching bleeps and bloops. It's this furious sonic assault that I can only really characterize as like the metal equivalent of Big Fish Theory. Like, just think of how blown out that album's production was, and just imagine that applied to a metal context. And it certainly doesn't really like let up from there. It's just pretty much on like the brakes the whole time, especially like on Goer Street, the immediate track after, where there's this kind of sliding up and down of chugging riffs that explodes into like these cool, like awesome sounding digital bleeps. Like, it just feels like this masterful swelling tension, making great use of like the digital effects and everything. You have Fluorescent Lights, which swaps wildly between like, you know, the very tapping, squealing Tony Danza style mathy leads, and you know, leaving some space for like more sparse grooves that still feel like almost kind of doomy in a sense, but like still like relentlessly evil and everything. There are times, you know, it's as much as it goes like full force, like a freight train. There are songs like Heartless 101, which opens more with like this melodic, clean guitar melody before it segues into, again, a more sparse, like groove heavy chug that still works in a lot of those, you know, chaotic bursts of like off kilter chord progressions and those sort of squealing digital leads. And, you know, it certainly winds back up a bit to harder hitting in the back half, but, you know, that break certainly helps, you know, give you a tiny bit of a breather. And, you know, you have songs like The Destruction Artist, which kind of go between, like, the super genty riffs, you know, these kind of ascending, descending, squealing slides, those sort of sparse chugs, you know, basically in the same vein as the previous song. Of course, there are also tracks like Neon Barnacle, which goes full hard for its first half, and then its back half descends into more of like this Aphex Twin-style electronic break, but still being coated in a lot of those throat-heavy, shredding screams. It's just, it's amazing how this thing, as full force as it is, it never really gets boring. And while I do agree the album could maybe be trimmed down a bit, this is like 14 tracks at about 52 minutes, it's still a fucking just, it is a trip. If you want one of the most unrelenting metal releases of the year, Unloved, check it out. Don't pass it up. Don't be sleeping on these guys, you know. There's stuff we tell you not to sleep on, but this is really something not to sleep on. And now for my second top pick, an EP, of course. EP number 3 of 4 from the Louisiana Sludge Meddlers, Thou, with Rhea Sylvia. This one, you know, their previous two EPs were released on different labels, and this one no different. This one coming out on a Converge's label, Deathwish Inc. And it's worth noting, there's almost a bit of, like, knowledge as to the conception of this one, as not only does it fit into their weird, you know, conceptual release thing leading up to Magus, but this one in particular was evidently started as a solo project from the band's guitarist Matthew Thudium, and it has sort of that sense in that it feels like partly separate but also wholly part of Thou at the same time. The opening track, The Only Law, has a minute of, like, this moody, droning ambient before it gets into this slow, sludgy jam that feels characteristically Thou, but as per the description of this album as a melodic grunge EP, you get those chorus-laden, like, you know, guitar melodies over top, you know, the sludgy riffs and the distortion, and even when the vocals are, like, that throat-shedding, just... you still, like, there's actually this undercurrent of, like, you know, clean, moaning sun vocals by Brian Funk. Those are, again, more, like, moody, like, something like that. It's trying to be, like, all, you know, fit with the moon and everything. It accentuates pretty, everything, you know, pretty well, and he helps tie it everything together pretty well with that performance. Unfortunate Times continues that mood pretty well, with the guitars, you know, still embodying more that somber sense of melancholy and depression. And once you get to the track Non-Entity, it's that one that arguably highlights sort of the divide between the two styles and sort of where they mesh together interestingly well. It opens with the gravelly screeches, the kind of sparse drum, you know, beat, and the guitars throughout most of it are those clean grunge guitars. Like, they just let, like, you know, those go while, like, the actual sludgy low end don't even really kick in all that much throughout the album, EP, rather. And, of course, Deepest Sun is the most explicitly grunge song on the record, as, you know, it's got, like, a steady sort of tempo, you know, with the depressing melodies playing off the distorted guitars, and vocals that are actually more, like, tuneful. They're moody, but they're not as moaning. They're carrying a tune. Basically, and if I had to sum up this album as a whole, this is basically the doom metal Alice in Chains, because, you know, the vocal performance of this one especially sounds more like that Jerry Cantrell style, and, you know, it's kind of a natural extension the way they do it. This, I think of the three EPs so far, this probably has to be my favorite release, and the one that has me the most interested to see how it all ultimately ties together on Magus, you know, that coming at the end of the month. Also, there's a pretty good cover of The Lasting Dose by the sludge band Crowbar on here, so you got that to look forward to as well if you listen to this. Alright, this one I'm going to go by a bit quick. It's another top pick and another possible album of the year contender. Move aside, Pusha T, Denzel, you have the floor. Yeah, Denzel Curry, Taboo. You know, I just checked out his last album, I'm trying to remember the name, Imperial, I think it was, like, on a whim, and I was, like, kind of... you know, jamming into it. You know, it was fucking, like, trap-ass bangers of the SoundCloud aesthetic, but, you know, with him, he actually has got, like, flow and charisma, and more importantly, swagger. He doesn't sound like... so that made it, like, more, like, cool to listen to. And, yeah, the release strategy on this thing is weird, but then again, BT Bam, you know, they dropped 2 albums 4 months apart, so who am I to judge? And, you know... going by the acts, yeah, Act 1, you know, they call it light, and while it's not, you know, it's not bleak, it certainly is in some sense, the production, relatively speaking, sort of is. You know, you listen to the title track, which kind of has, like, a bit of an R&B vibe to the production, and especially Cash Maniac, you know, that's a pretty good song, but hell, it sounds like he's rapping over a Kitty instrumental, or, like, you know, something else from the 80s, pretty much. And, yeah, that me at my lowest, no Peter Griffin, that's a funny line. And then, you know, just to kind of segue into Act 2, closing out with Sumo, just bringing up the fire savagery, you know, like the kind of savagery you expect in a sumo wrestling match or some shit. And, yeah, just think about it. A rap song that brings together Avatar, Chowder, and the Sly Cooper series in one. Who else is going to give you that but Denzel? Then, you know, Act 2, Gray, which kind of gets into, I guess you could say, maybe moral gray areas, because there's sort of a recurring motif of Denzel's relationship to fame and everything. You know, on the tracks, like, Switch It Up and, what's the other one here? Mad I Got It. They both have the theme of, like, okay, so now I'm big and famous. There's all these, like, motherfuckers that are trying to, like, step up to me and all people, you know, acting like they're my friends, even though they don't give a shit about me because I got, you know, cash and a lot of followers on SoundCloud and all that shit. And, you know, little touches of, like, bipolar disorder as well, you know, sort of those themes working into the mix. And, yeah, Cloud Cobain as well, specifically, like, how, you know, popularity and social media metrics can drive a motherfucker insane at times. Then, of course, Act 3, Dark, where the gloves really come off, and he just fucking lets loose on all these fucking amateur motherfuckers who think they could step up to them. With these dumbass niggas, and they don't say shit, sound like, dur, 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 you're like, oh, that's lit. With your boof-ass hits, I'ma fuck your bitch, and just pop two Zans, fuck that shit. He's gotta kill everyone like Kenny, and go hard like Timber! And, yeah, Vengeance just, That JPEG Mafia verse, that is a fine way to help tie things out together. And yeah, pretty much, I'm tempted to say, look, as much as I like Daytona, this just gives me double the content, and it's also just as good. So, you know, there's still a place for Daytona, but I'm sorry, Taboo is just like, it's doing it for me, man.
Yeah, because when you get two good rap albums.
And now, you know, I'm hungry. I'm craving some bacon, egg, and cheese on toast with sriracha. Ah, the lads in Psycho Stick. Which, you know, it's kind of... I was trying to figure out how I was going to talk about this one, because I did see that Crash Thompson, you know, quickie, and he does have a decent point about kind of, like, the appeal of comedy. You know, the Patton Oswalt argument, if you're saying that someone's not attractive, but somebody else has a boner to that person, you've lost the argument, and that's kind of how comedy is. You know, I think that to an extent, but I do think there's some value in sort of when you analyze comedy to an extent. Think about that whole thing in Ant-Man and the Wasp with the card tricks. I mean, think about it. The FBI agent got wowed by Scott Lang's, you know, card mastery, and it made him want to learn how to do it. So, even if he knows how to do it, you could still think that's, like, cool in some way. And, yeah, this album is at the exact sweet spot of my... Like, I like to think I can laugh at some more sophisticated stuff, but then again, I just laugh at shit that's, like, really dumb. I mean, come on, this album opens up with, like, a dramatic symphonic metal intro that basically gets cut off because the singer Rob gets interrupted by a random call from some motherfucker. And, you know, it certainly sets the stage decently. I mean, when it gets into the song You Can Maybe Do It, a song all about something I relate to all too well, giving up easily under pressure because I suck. You know, the song, I mean, musically, it's great. Hell, it almost sounds a little Slipknot-y, just because, like, the guitars sound like they're more tuned to drop B, almost, relative to where they usually keep their tunings and everything. And, you know, there is some great use of, like, the actual song rhythm once it gets to the chorus to sell that punchline, you know, when I get knocked down, I get upset about it. You know, it's just, it's that right sort of swing into that, you know, setup of expectations. And then, of course, there's the song all about how great Tuesday is. And, you know, it is a great day, not just because my radio show is on that day. Plug. From the Heart is still, like, a fucking hilarious comedy ballad about, you know, it's not the first time Psycho Stick have written a song about hating the shit out of someone. But, you know, they obviously know how to do that well. And it certainly shows off some really damn good musical chops. Like I said, for all the talk about these guys as juvenile comedians, they are certainly very, you know, sharp musicians when it comes to, like, actual technique and chops. This one with, you know, its odd acoustic melodies and rhythms. I'm still not sure how I'm supposed to be counting this stuff. And, of course, there's a hilarious running joke throughout the album where they're trying to write a song called Got No Breaks. You know, it starts off with got underscore no underscore breaks underscore demo dot wave, which starts off with them trying to, you know, get through the song before they descend into this massive argument about the logistics of the lyrical metaphor, because how the hell does a boat actually stop when technically speaking it doesn't have brakes? And just hearing them all scream at each other over the nature of the metaphor is hilarious. And then once you get to part two, got no breaks mix version 3.wave, then they're arguing about the actual song because they want to be like, hey, let's put in some weird time signatures, or hey, let's all solo at the same time. It's never been done. And then finally, when we get the final version of the song, Got No Breaks, Final Mix 03, Final 07. Wave, that's when you just hear every terrible idea they brainstormed all come in at once. You know, this is the pre-chorus, we're gonna put something in here later. And then all throughout the background of the song, you're just hearing, like, the sounds of people working out, because they guess they recorded people at a gym. Not to mention the random sound of Rob drinking coffee. Is like, oh, whatever. It's not like it's going to ruin the song. it's just funny, man. Yeah. The go ahead.
I'm saying, they got some fine comedic chops over here, including some of the songs that we heard in the build-up to this, such as Adulting. Still rings true.
Yeah. Sergeant Snuggles. And of course, Introvert Party still relates to me on a deeply cosmic level.
Yes, you and me both. Of course, we can't omit the genius that is Bacon, Egg, and Cheese on Toast with Sriracha, the best song about food since... Whoa, good Lord, it's a cheeseburger! A double!
Double!
All patties, pickles, onions, on a sesame seed bun!
Yes, the I'm band hungry. That once wrote an entire album called Sandwich... is still writing songs about food. But, you know, between the more standard-sized songs, there are, like, the shorter gag songs, like Keys, which, man, if that doesn't... I relate to that also on a cosmic level. Where the fuck are my keys and wallets? Of course, one of the more musically interesting songs, Moving Day, about the frustrations of trying to help one of your dipshit friends move. You know, even though you're promised, like, food and money, but they didn't help you out anyway. And the song kind of, it has those sort of Slipknot-y bits, like it sounds like that super creepy Gehenna track off All Hope Is Gone. And there, in some of the verses, there's a bit of a Mastodon-esque groove in there, you know, and then the rest of the song is just straight Psycho Stick stuff, ending with the house being set on fire. And Rob asking his, hey buddy, question, do you need both of these blenders? Because I wanted to keep one. I saw this. I like making smoothies. I saw this really delicious recipe online. And, you know, yeah, like, your mileage will vary. Unless I know some people have more sophisticated senses of humor, and some people don't like metal mixed in with their comedy, but what it is, I laughed. I laughed a lot listening to this, because, you know, that's just me. That's what I do. I laugh at, you know, stupid shit. And now, for the second to last one of these, Obscura. Yes, Diluvium. This time, this album didn't take 5 fucking years to get. You know, unlike the gap between Omnivium, which was my jumping onto the point to the band, and in my opinion, still their best album, and 2016's Acroasis. This time, it only took 2 years. Thank God, I couldn't bear the weight. And yeah, so... pretty much right from the start, it wastes no time, you know, opening with Clandestine Stars, the frantic and ominous vibe of the guitar syncopations and the way their melodies interact with each other at all these odd intervals, and of course, you know, the fucking heavy, suffocating vocal dynamic, which on this album, the vocals, perhaps more so than previous Obscura releases, swap heavily between, you know, those deep, bellowing, guttural vocals, and very synthetically, like, coated cleans, which I guess mixed in very well with a sort of almost, like, pseudo-spiritual cosmic motif. Sets the foundation well, you know, keeps things going through everything, like the title track, which was the lead-off single, similarly mimicking the off-kilter, you know, syncopations, leaving room for halftime bridges, and some breathing room for stream-like chord progressions. And seriously, the interplay here is a lot of... you, like, on Ethereal Skies with the tap-heavy melodies and the rapid 16th-note tremolo riffs, the way they all play off each other, building this big, epic vibe accentuated by, like, the string accompaniments. Then tracks like Ek Prerosis with its pretty consistent riff punctuated by, you know, the rhythmic guitars and drums and the very dark melodic work and use of acoustic guitars on top of the noodling bass passages and everything. Of course, the drum work here is pretty excellent. Well, you know, Sebastian Lancer, he can excellently match the more frenetic whiplash tone of everything. And, you know, the blast beats and some polyrhythmic tendencies, and even, you know, songs like Mortification of the Vulgar Sun, which kind of evoke more of an Omnivium vibe than anything else, with just how massive, you know, the groove sound. There are some hard-hitting, like, you know, tom-based drum fills and beats in there. It all, you know, comes together in a pretty satisfying way, although, admittingly, if you're not much into tech death, I can't say this will do much for you. This is very much, you know, a tech death fan's record through and through. So if you've never really been able to get into this, I don't really know what to say to you. But, you know, for me, I liked it better than Acroasis, especially thanks to the overall stronger production style. And it's a fitting conclusion to whatever conceptual motif was running through their album since Cosmogenesis. We shall see where they go from there, and hopefully it won't take 5 years. And then, of course, for the last album I gotta bring up in my top picks, 4 months later, Between the Baron and Me, Automata 2. Now, as I pretty much mentioned, the first half of Automata played a pretty damn solid groundwork. Nice balance of sort of colors and great Mr. X-style metalcore, with some of the more prog-oriented musical stylings of Parallax and Coma Ecliptic. A lot I liked about it, though, it felt like it ended at pretty much, like, the part where you were like, no, I want more.
Yep, the end of Blot.
And so, you know, it's appropriate that it goes from the monstrous 10-minute Blot to the 13-minute proverbial bellow, which, again, I say it evokes more of a Colors vibe just because the way it starts off in its first few moments reminds me very explicitly of prequel to the sequel. Just that mix of grooving drums and almost major key style melodic guitar interplay, sounding almost kind of a upbeat and definitely proggier. Although I do see some of those Coma Ecliptic vibes with, like, you know, how the synths, you know, work in there and everything. And of course, you know, they also work to accentuate, like, some of the strikes of the guitar chords in the heavier passages. And some pretty aggressive blast beating here as well. It's certainly, you know, it's immediately contrasted by, like, sort of the soft extended bridge. And once it gets into the dreamier parts, you know, there's a dream motif on this album, kids. You know, it gets really, with those synths and everything, just kind of driving everything, and the vocal melodies, which are made just that much more haunting by the actual lyrical content of, please pick up the phone, it's been ringing for years now, I'm so alone here. Yeah, if I can give this back part here some credit, it certainly illuminates more on the concept a lot better than Automata Part 1 did, at least in my opinion. Then, you know, you get the Frenchy, polka glide before swinging wildly into fucking Voice of Trespass, a wild beast of a song with that fast double bass driven shoveling swing big band vibe, accentuated, you know, by, like, the, you know, syncopated guitar passages, the blaring trumpet lines, you know, the shuffling pianos and finger snaps in there with Tommy Rogers' more snarky vocal delivery. It sounds like the most menacing Sonic the Hedgehog casino level you will ever play. And I only partially being jokey about that. And, you know, there's even, like, fucking xylophones and shit in there, man. Xylophones! And yes, that particularly dark, ominous back half with that "We are hollow, condemned to the gallows," which I think what drives that home is the fact that every ride cymbal hit, or at least every other one, is accentuated by, like, this loud bang of clanging steel that just makes it sound like they're in a dungeon or something. And yeah, the grid feels like a good way to close out, since it's probably the most dream-heavy, like, in terms of vibe, because the synth work is very, like, you know, hazy. It blends well with, like, the intersecting guitar melodies with a steady 6/8 groove that just kind of drives home how disorienting it all feels. It's a bit contrasted with some of the groovier metalcore chugs and everything, and the vocals also get coated in a lot of that, you know, digital warbling that blend in with, like, the synths and the bleeps and blips and everything. You know, it closes out on this, like, as the lyrics paint this uncomfortable image of our protagonist getting sealed into whatever machine is broadcasting his dreams to the public. Which reminds me, I saw a playlist on Spotify that supposedly ordered the tracks in proper chronological order. I kind of want to listen to that once I get done with this.
Yeah, sometimes you get something like that where the order differs from version to version. Like with Galacticon 2, the vinyl version has the proper chronological order of events compared to the CD or, you know, the digital version. Always a cool little thing.
Yeah, but that was a fan-made playlist, so I'm guessing that's just best guess based off the context clues in the album sheets, the liner notes. And yeah, you know, as much as I like how this all ultimately comes together in the big picture of things, and, you know, I think overall the album is on par with stuff like Colors of the Great Misdirect, yeah, this really didn't need to be a staggered, you know, release in this manner. I mean, hell, this is only about one track longer and about the same length as the Parallax Hypersleep Dialogues, and that was an EP. Plus, at least that was, like, a ramp-up to a much bigger, like, 77-minute album. You know, you could have done that. You could have crammed all this into, like, you know, the 68 minutes that it is. But, you know, other than that, this is, like, a fantastic, you know, way to close things out, and... yeah, I will have to deliberate on where this ends up on my best of the year list. And now, let me just go through a quick run through of some other things. First up, Skeleton Witch, Devouring Radiant Light. Yeah, overall, definitely leans in more on sort of the black metal overtones than previous albums, while still maintaining a lot of the solid thrash fundamentals of it, with a lot of really satisfying riffs and, you know, melody build-ups and everything. The only reason I put it as a quick run-through is because I already got so much shit that's probably going to be making my end-of-the-year list that this might end up getting bumped. Like, that's how good the year has been overall. I had to deliberate on Skeleton Witch. One of my other quick picks, Idiot Rising, Head in the Clouds. Yeah, this, you know, basically just sounds like your breezy kind of trap rap stuff. You know, you got your Rich Brian stuff, your Joji stuff, Keith Ape, August 8th. Ugh, Play by Cardi. And, you know, there's some okay summer jams on here. It's definitely at least accomplishing that vibe, at least. But other than that, I don't really feel much towards it. This next one was a release that kind of went mildly viral through the Twitters and the band camps. That being Neckbeard Death Camp. White Nationalism is for Basement Dwelling Losers. And, you know... I just think this existence of this project is worth it just because it pisses off a lot of the, you know, fuck Antifa, you know, metal crowd. And, you know, pissing them off is always worth it. And last but definitely not least, Darren Malakian and Scars on Broadway, Dictator. To which I'll say, I certainly like it better than the first Scars on Broadway album. It's still not really wowing me because a lot of it is kind of, you know, still just basic radio rock sort of thing. But with that said, there's some, when the album is on point, there is some damn, you know, solid riffs and bangers on here, like Angry Guru, and, you know, especially, you know, the title track and Assimilate, which feel like the closest we're gonna get to any, you know, primo System of a Down material, you know, anytime soon. Look, I just want them worth of their bullshit so we can get, you know, Surge and Darren back in the studio together, please. And now, for the last part here, the last three albums I gotta bring up, which are the lowlights. And first up, yeah, let's, you know, go back to 2008 and pick on some mediocre deathcore, because that's what year it is, apparently. Chelsea Grin, Eternal Nightmare. Because apparently these guys are still around, and, you know, just whatever, they're taking up resources in the studio to make what counts as music, I guess. You know, it opens up as cornily as it ever could, with horror samples and the sounds of clanging chains before it's jumping straight into Chugs and Blez of Dead Rose. And then on the second track, immediately, The Wolf, the intro has a lot of these, like, really badly incorporated electronics. You know, because we can't get away from that in deathcore now, can we? And even worse, though, there's a lot of this annoying, like, kind of buzzy electronic filtration on some of the guitar chugs. Like, it sounds like these really awkward interruptions, like something is trying to break through or whatever, but just, I don't even know what is this, man. You know, See You Soon has, like, those verse breaks where it's just the drums and vocals and, you know, the very dramatic electronics underneath, and then when the guitars do come in, it's those really annoying chugs and even more annoying pinch harmonics. which just, you know, Metalocalypse makes it sound cool, you just make it sound tired and unnecessary. Sense of Evil is annoyingly slow, but it still tries to sell itself as super epic. And, you know, even Hostage does the same thing with the way the chords kind of, like, you know, like that thing sometimes people sometimes do where, like, when they're syncopating or chugging on a chord progression, like, super low end, and the chugs sound like they're squeaking? Like, I don't know what that is or if that's just, like, a symptom of, like, bad technique, but, like, you know, when you're listening to a chug and you almost kind of feel like a squealing, like, I don't know what that is, like, plastic or something? Just whatever. This whole thing is just, it's just more Chelsea Grin. It's just taking up space that could probably be used by, you know, other better, more talented acts. Now to my second lowlight here, and don't worry, kids, this isn't the kind of thing that would make a worst of the year list, but again, this is just my taste. I guess here I have to invoke the Crash Thompson philosophy more than anything else. The only opinion that really matters is your own. Because it's the guys in Death Heaven with Ordinary Corrupt Human Love.
Oh.
Yeah. Let me just say something that occurred to me when going back to listen to this album and some of the earlier stuff just to refresh my memory. Death Heaven seems like a band that's maybe a little bit driven by insecurity. Like, okay, so Sunbather, that came out, you know, 2013. Not the first, you know, album to combine shoegaze, post, and black metal all together. Hell, if you ask their members, they'll literally admit that this was happening a good 10 years before that band even formed. But Sunbather kind of got a right place, right time sort of thing and became a huge deal in its, you know, metal circles and everything. Naturally, there was also a lot of complaints that it was bastardizing the black metal genre and fuck this shoegaze crap, this isn't real metal! Which that discourse, air quotes, is how I heard about the band in the first place. And I think this might have gotten to them on some level because on their follow-up, New Bermuda, yeah, there was still some of those signature Death Heaven musical motifs, but there was definitely much more of a focus on more aggro thrash riffs. Like a lot of the riffing on the album sounded more like Slayer than anything else. And, you know, to be fair, the album did receive a lot of acclaim from a lot of publications, but there were also pockets of the fandom, you know, that were like, man, what's with all this, like, thrash riffing shit? Like, why are they trying to sound like Slayer? This is not why I listen to Death Heaven. And then, I guess that got to them too, because Ordinary Corrupt Human Love returns more to the Sunbather motif, you know, where instead of being, like, five really long tracks, it's about a good 7-8, you know, with half of it being long tracks and half of it being, like, 4 or 5 minute, you know, more clean interludes, you know, breaking up the rhythm like that. And stylistically, it even doubles down on it quite a bit. Like, I don't remember any piano stuff on Sunbather, but starting off the album right away with that on You Without End kind of seems like a deliberate statement of intent on that end. And the song isn't even, like, with the exception of the vocals, like, the rest of the instrumentation isn't, like, super black metal in any immediately obvious way. That comes up in, you know, Honeycomb, where it gets that more familiar balance of the screeching black metal riffs and, you know, the atmospheric chord progressions and the shimmery alternative rock stylings, which, you know, again, this is very much your mileage will vary. For me, it's just, this never worked for me, at least the way Death Heaven does it, because it's just, like, you know, it's too jarring and they spend way too much time on individual songs. Like, you know, at least with Alcest it flows better, and with Sandhead it's like instrumental and the songs are a lot more compact, you know. And you know, doubly because this is the album that definitely emphasizes the clean vocals more than anything else, which I never heard on previous Death Heaven records, especially with that on and on and on, you know, bit all off on what was it, Canary Yellow, I think. And, you know, getting into that lush, you know, post-metal vibes before getting into the harder hits. It's really, you know, hokey and corny and, you know, it helps segue into, like, the more entirely post-rock, you know, segues like Near. And, you know, the album didn't work for me overall, but I will be kind. If there's one part, at least, that I actually really liked, that would probably be the guitar solo somewhere near the middle of the song Glint. That part I actually really liked, because it felt not even really like, you know, shoegaze or post-metal or black metal. It felt more like just some standard kind of, like, almost glammy hard rock, but as filtered through that kind of veneer, and it weirdly worked, in my opinion. But overall, it's just this band doesn't do much for me. But again, that's just me. Try it out for yourself and have a ball with it.
Yeah, fair enough. I was listening to this sort of without context and in a vacuum, so I don't really have much to judge it to. So, yeah, that's how I got to it.
Well, I'll just say avoid the discourse. Def Heaven discourse is super annoying.
Isn't all discourse super annoying?
You know, now that I think about it, yeah, just no discourse. No discourse. Only discord.
Yes, and ours.
And now for my last one here. This one I left off the list proper, but I probably foreshadowed recently because, yeah, this is, this could make a worst of list. And we're going to have to, for this one, go into weeaboo territory. Now, of course, you know, July marks the start of the newest anime season or core, and sadly I'm still behind on a lot of stuff. But thankfully it seems like, you know, with the exception of a few big things, things have kind of slowed down as far as like the just constant trickling and streaming down of anime shows. But it's not without its big hitters. You know, obviously everyone seems to like Cells at Work, Planet With, that badminton show I heard is really good. And then, of course, the late last of the premieres, relatively speaking, but of course one of the biggest, Season 3 of Attack on Titan, which I'm editing reviews for, but I still have not watched myself, because I got a couple more backlog things I gotta clear through first, but, you know, I really want to watch it. It's just, yeah, fine, you know, people have mixed feelings about the series, you know, even the people that like it sometimes feels like it's fucking, like, testing their patience. You know, Alex over here is a prime example. But, you know, for me, I'm still on board the Titan hype train. And, of course, obviously, the companies that invest in this shit are, because, you know, they still gotta milk this shit any way they can. Because I think they had those theatrical screenings and stuff for, like, was it episodes or recap movies? I forgot which one.
It was both. The recap for Season 2 and the first episode of Season 3.
Ah, that's what it was. But it turns out it's not just the licensors and production companies that are trying to cash in on this, because there was an EP that I heard about but completely forgot was coming out this month, and I had to listen to it, and yeah, that was a waste of, like, what, like 35, 40 minutes? Yeah, it's Epica versus Attack on Titan songs. Now, if you don't know who Epica is, short version, they are the poor, poor, poor man's Nightwish. That's really about all you need to know. And, yeah, as you can imagine from the title, this is a covers album. Specifically, it covers the three OPs from, you know, the first two seasons of the show. Not to mention, we get a bonus track from, you know, one of the soundtrack albums. And that's just, it's four tracks, but then there's also four instrumentals, which I'll touch on that in a minute. I could just go, sort of go through the first song, just to kind of embody in microcosm what bugs me about this so much. Because, you know, if you're going to cover some of the most bomb-ass, hype-as-fuck anime OPs to come out in the last 5 or 10 years, then you better be damn good enough to pull it off. And right away, you know, it opens, of course, with Crimson Bow and Arrow, the classic. It starts off with an addition, something that's not even in the original song or any version of it. These dramatic horns that, you know, build up to the actual, the intro vocal thing that, da, da, na, 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 you know, building to that part. And just the fact that they had to add those horns is giving me bad vibes already, because they think they need to add to what are already great compositions. And, you know, once the actual da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na kicks in, the choir vocals and the actual guitar riffs, you know, they're bombastic as hell, sure, but they kind of feel like they're suffocating everything else, like, you know, especially all the symphonic elements. And not to mention, the verse removes, like, some of the more driving percussive elements that are present in the original, which makes things feel a little bit hollow. Not to mention with added double bass drums and some rhythmic switch-ups here and there. And the way that the actual lead vocals almost seem to, like, overtake the choir vocals and all the additional symphonic elements, it creates the sense that for all they're trying to do to pump up the songs and make them sound even more epic, they somehow feel even less epic. And just to compound this problem earlier, once it gets past that first chorus, there is a verse of growled vocals on here, because that's what Attack on Titan OPs needed. Not to mention, there's like this annoying like synth break near the end that's supposed to be a substitute for that last little guitar shred, you know, and, you know, if you think synths are an acceptable substitute for those epic power metal guitars, then you are wrong. And, you know, now that you think about it, there's this weird thing with the actual strings that are doing the main melody. There's kind of like this awkward, like, staccato to them, where it just kind of feels like they cut off a little shorter than they're supposed to. So it doesn't feel like it's, you know, all that present, allowing, you know, the rest of the instrumentation to just suffocate everything. So, yeah, we got a lot of overblown to the point of being underbaked, if that makes any sense. And, you know, it certainly doesn't help once it gets to, Wings of Freedom, where, yeah, the choir vocals on here definitely don't match up to the ones that were present on the original version. And, you know, there's more of synthetic keyboards replacing the shredding guitars. Because you know how the guitar goes in that opening part of the song, you know, the dinner, 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 you know, I can't do it well with my voice, because obviously I'm not, you know, that cool, but you get the idea. But instead, the guitars are playing this, you know, chugged, like, you know, grooving low-end riff with the synthetic keyboards taking care of the lead guitar stuff, and it is not an acceptable substitute at all. Let me just say that right now. And the first verse, like, you know how, like, that song has a really, you know, driving kind of double-time drum beat? But here, the first verse reduces that to halftime, and the beat basically just slows to a crawl like that. It removes, you know, the dramaticness and the build-up, and no, none of the heavy, you know, hammer blast parts and all the screaming does not help things either. Ah, jeez, this is all really getting on my nerves, because, like, if you were going to cover this, make sure you can at least do it justice instead of thinking like you can usurp songs that are already damn great to begin with. And, you know, there's definitely, that also extends to, like, Dedicate Your Heart. And, you know, I guess the song I'm least annoyed by is, like, the one track that technically came off one of the Attack on Titan, you know, Linked Horizon soundtrack albums, If Inside These Walls Was a House, which I think the actual original title might actually be referencing, you know, like, if the inside of these walls, like, you know, all the three walls that encircle the civilization and everything. And that one, I guess, is okay because there isn't as much bombast, so there's less to ruin. But overall, it's just like, you know, each one of these arranges things in a way where it just sucks out all of the appeal. Like, it's the most perfect definition of why would I listen to this when I can just listen to the original OPs? And yeah, to compound things further, for some reason, this EP has instrumental versions of all the songs. And, you know, to be fair, they still include the choir chants, which I guess kind of, if you want to get super technical, means they're not instrumentals.
There's a reason for that, actually. They're meant to be karaoke versions.
Yeah, I guess, karaoke. But, you know, But, like, if I'm just listening to this, I'm not listening to this at a karaoke context. I'm just listening to the whole thing because they put it out and sold it. They didn't sell this to karaoke bars. They sold it to the average consumer who likes either Epica, Attack on Titan, or both. And, you know, when you're listening to the instrumental versions of this, it's such a mistake because, like, the vocals are part of the hype. They carry most of, like, the really instantly, you know, catchy melodies and everything. So it's like, what is the point? You could have just done the first four tracks and then sell the rest off to the karaoke bar. Jeez, it's just like, you know, this might not be as infuriatingly obnoxious as Fall Out Boy, as inexcusably shitty as Ministry, or even whatever that Panic at the Disco album was last month, but this album is just annoying enough that I can't let it go. It's like when the kid in the back of the class is blowing spit wads at you, and you just want to turn around and be like, can you not? Please? Fuck, you're so annoying. If you don't stop right now, I'm going to send your mom those pictures of you at the Christmas party. But it's like, you know, again, Epica. If you're ever going to do this again, can you just leave shows I like alone? Why don't you cover the OPs for stuff like, I don't know, Parasite or something? At least then you're touching the band that you don't give a shit about.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
Yeah, I've been waiting to say that.
Looks like Epica was not so epic. God damn.
No, they most certainly are not. And yeah, that basically rounds things out for me. So, yeah, thank you for listening to our roundups. Of course, be sure to subscribe to this podcast, share it around. You know, what were some of your favorite albums of the past month? You know, put that in the comment section thing or whatever, because that's what it's there for. Of course, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. And of course, we'll see you for the next main episode. And until next time, God, just go away, Epica. What are you even doing here?
Remember, dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge.
13.